Hello and welcome to the fifth episode of Pause, Play, Rewind, Daily Bruin's very own A&E podcast. I'm radio senior staffer Lilit Arakelian.
And I'm assistant radio editor Stefan Fan.
So joining us today on the show will be A&E film and television editor Sebastian Torellio and A&E reporter Tony Huang for another edition of Love Hate. Then we'll wrap up the show with A&E editor Al Patenkar and second-year bioengineering student Jordan Abel and Stephen Engao with the UCLA Rap Music Club to talk about Hip Hop Appreciation Month. Let's get started, Stefan.
There's a lot to talk about this week, and I'm pretty excited for the next season of House of Cards coming out this Friday. Are you going to watch it?
No. I actually haven't gotten on that train.
You haven't watched House of Cards?
Yeah, I've heard so many good things. I mean, okay, tell me why I should watch House of Cards.
Okay, well, first, Kevin Spacey plays the lead role as a congressman, Francis Underwood. It shows his really almost fantastic world of politics, and they do this really great thing where Spacey's character breaks the fourth wall. It's really fun. And what's great is because Netflix releases all the episodes at once, it's so easy to marathon.
Right, okay. Yeah, the last marathon I had was Downton Abbey, so.
Yeah, I'm really behind on Downton Abbey. Freebates.
I'm behind. The marathons are not good for you, but they feel so good. Guilty pleasures. Well, being an English major, I like going on. I'm subscribed to all these poetry pages and yada yada yada. And I came across this article that said, from Poetry Foundation actually, and it said that Kristen Stewart submitted one of her poems to a magazine that she was interviewing for, and then so I clicked on it, you know, sort of interested in seeing what kind of poem Kristen Stewart would write. It was fine. But what I really liked to see was a UCLA professor actually wrote to Stewart and sort of gave her feedback as if she was one of his own students in the class. I mean, and then they published it, and there were like multiple sources online that were like, UCLA professor responds to Stewart's poem. I thought it was interesting. And she was sort of called like very beatnik inspired, I guess, because she had that sort of training when she did On the Road, which is Jack Kerouac's novel. So she would have that kind of inspiration. But I just thought it was interesting that a UCLA professor was in the news associated with Stewart's poem.
Yeah, that's Assistant Professor Brian Kim Steffens. So shouts out to you, Professor. This letter to her was honestly pretty funny to read.
Yeah. And he wasn't even condemning her. He was like giving her constructive feedback. I like that. I like that we have a positive representative at UCLA. Because he said like journalists were so quick to condemn her just for the sake of condemning her or like insulting her. But I like that he gave positive feedback. Very nice.
All right. So let's do pick of the week. Lilit, what do you have for us?
My pick of the week is a new exhibition that opened at the Hammer Museum. It's called Take It or Leave It, and it opened this past Sunday. And also, I think students shouldn't forget that the Hammer Museum is, you know, UCLA turf, basically. It's so close to campus. And recently, it was always free for UCLA students, but it recently became free for the general public as well, for basically anyone, every day. And they have, you know, their goal is to have it free forever. So it's this really amazing initiative that they have. It's called Free for Good. So Take It or Leave It is a new exhibition. It features 35 artists, and they're exploring, you know, institutional critique and appropriation within their art. It's just like really cool to think about like the challenge that this poses to artists, where they're sort of questioning like the institution that sort of displays and produces and distributes their art, which could mean like museums and galleries, but also just in a broader context, the political and social institutions that would kind of contribute to their art just because they live in that society and are born from that society. So I just think it's very interesting. I would recommend that everyone go check it out since it's so close to campus. And what's your pick of the week, Stefan?
So my pick of the week isn't super relevant, but it's what I've been doing recently. I've been reading James Salas's novel Drive, the book based off the movie, which I adore, by the way. Have you not seen it, Lily?
No, I love Drive. I didn't even know it was a book.
No, yeah, it totally is. Yeah, so I've been reading Drive, and it's been a good time. It's hard not to picture the driver as Ryan Gosling, but I'm only halfway through so far. But it's a great read.
Very cool. I might just check that out, because I loved Drive. I'd love to read the book.
You definitely should. So we're back this week again for another edition of Love Hate with the A&E film and television editor Sebastian Trelio and Tony Huang, A&E writer. So first off, Shia LaBeouf this week has been acting sort of crazy.
What happened was they had the premiere for Nymphomaniac, and Shia shows up because he's getting all these Twitter rants and stuff like that. And he shows up wearing a paper bag on his head, like that guy from The Gong Show. And it just says, "I am not famous anymore," written across the top. And he shows up on the red carpet wearing that. And that happened a couple days ago. And now he's doing an art exhibit at one of those places. And people sit with Shia in this room. And there's like a bunch of objects there, like a ukulele and like a Transformers toy and like one of David Crowe's books. And they can just do whatever they want with them.
So Shia LaBeouf went James Franco on us, is what you're saying. I feel like this is a tactic that many pop stars have stolen from Kanye West, is when the going gets tough in the press, you start being really arty. And people were just like, oh, he was a genius all along.
So you were love? Yeah, hate. This would have made a really good love-hate topic. And it's just, oh, God. I really want to see Shia. I want to go and see Shia before it's too late. But I think they close early on Wednesdays. So, whatever.
Also, what was really popular this week, the very addicting game Flappy Bird. It was taken off the App Store. Dong Wing, the creator of the app, thought it was, like, too much for him to handle. So what do you guys think about, you know, the whole Flappy Bird craze? I mean, it's super popular.
It's extremely cool in my mind that something can be so unpredictably popular. And it's because it's simple, and obviously because it's just ridiculously addicting. And it's a testament to show that media is so ridiculously unpredictable, and that this thing that I heard about last week will just surge in popularity and into some kind of crisis level paranoia. And it's dumb, but it's fun, I guess. It's Flappy.
It's an interesting game because you can tell how little effort has been put into it.
I guess I have to go with love. I can't hate it.
Wait. So to clarify, do you love it getting taken down the App Store, or do you love Flappy Bird?
I love just the whole concept. The whole concept and all the media attention to the game itself. I'll be neutral on that one.
I'll give a love to the game itself and go with the, who cares about the whole social situation.
So talking about another thing that was closed, shut down, stopped, canceled.
What are we talking about?
X Factor. Oh.
The X Factor got canceled. You know, hear that?
So no love for X Factor?
No, I never had love for X Factor.
Okay, so hate.
Yeah, love that it got canceled. There you go. Yeah, I never cared for it. It was just silly. It didn't have a structure to it that I understood at any point. It wasn't entertaining. No one I spoke to was a fan of X Factor. Like, my mom watches X Factor. I don't even think she's a fan of X Factor. It's just,
for me, like, X Factor is just, I have no idea what they're looking for and what's supposed to be happening. And I just feel confused by all the strange people doing strange things. So I'm going to go with hate there, too.
All right, so Greta Gerwig, which I didn't recognize right away until Tony said that she was in Frances Ha, she was recently casted into the new How I Met Your Mother spinoff, How I Met Your Dad, tentatively called. How do you guys feel about this?
It feels like almost a kind of a betrayal. Like, it feels like she's selling out, but I'm kind of optimistic about it. She's apparently writing and producing for it.
And Greta, have you seen No Strings Attached?
No Strings. That's the one with Ashton Kutcher?
Yeah. Yeah, Greta Gerwig was in that briefly.
That surprised me too. That was her first mainstream thing. I was like, oh, I guess she needs to get paid. But like, I've liked her since long ago in the Mumblecore movies, actually, where she, like, Hannah Takes the Stairs and Nights and Weekends. Yeah, I really like those movies. And I'm just worried that, because those movies are about, like, relationships and stuff too, but I guess it'll probably get dumbed down when it reaches network TV. It remains to be seen.
She's the vibe that they're putting on How I Met Your Dad seems to be kind of mumblecore-y. It's really, she's playing the same character she did in Frances Ha. Frances Ha from last year was, she, Greta Gerwig had one of my favorite actress performances of the year in her role in Frances Ha, which is just kind of this girl who's going about town, not really with any structure to her life or clue what she's doing. And the press releases to How I Met Your Dad seem like the exact same thing. And it seems to be on broadcast television. So that's really neat. I'm really happy for her. I think she'll do a fantastic job. I think she'll bring a little bit of that indie vibe to television, even if it's not indie. Yeah, I think it'll be great. She has the comedic talent. I'm very assured of that.
Okay, so love from Sebastian.
For me, I'm not too optimistic about the show itself, but I will be tuning in, which kudos to CBS. I would not have done otherwise. I'll go with the mild love, I suppose.
Hey, that's a good point. Like, when they announced that this spinoff was happening a couple months ago, I wasn't that interested. I thought they were just overrunning it. And now they announced the Greta Gerwig thing, and I'm interested. So I think they got their point across. Ain't no telling when I'm down for a jack move. Here's a murder at the keep ya
dancing. With a crime record like Charles Manson. AK-47 is... It's the 10th annual Hip Hop Appreciation Month hosted by UCLA's Hip Hop Congress. So I'm sitting with Annie, editor Al Patton Carr, to talk about it. Hey, Al, how are you?
Good. How are you, Stefan?
So let's talk about hip hop. I don't really know a lot about it. Luckily, we're sitting with the Rap Music Club, Jordan Abel, a second year bioengineering student. Hey, Jordan.
How's it going?
I'm doing well. And we have Steve Engau, or AKA Zinj. How are you?
Good, Stefan. How you doing?
I'm good. So, like, Jordan, like an average day at the Rap Club, what would you guys do?
What we'll do is we'll just like start playing different music, start doing different rap activities. Like, for example, we played this line game where one person would start with one line and then the next person has to rhyme with that line, and whoever can't rhyme has to freestyle.
But an important element just to bring up about hip hop is the funk music and jazz musicians such as James Brown. You know, that's really where hip hop started. You know, DJ Kool Herc in 1972 or early mid 70s, his sister Sylvia asked him if he could be a DJ for her birthday party. This is literally how hip-hop started. So what he did is he grabbed the James Brown record, and the drum break, he literally looped that. So if you hear N.W.A. Straight Outta Compton, boom, 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 the kick and drum for that, that's James Brown. If you listen to Public Enemy, the drum breaks, that's James Brown. You got also Isaac Hayes, the most classic samples in hip-hop from the Afro Lafayette band.
It's great that you mentioned that, Steven, because there's also been a lot of recent artists who have also used samples and who also talk about different ideals. Like, there's this one crew in particular called the Black Hippie Crew, and it's composed of Kendrick Lamar, J-Rock, Absol, and Schoolboy Q. A couple of those names are pretty well known, but there's definitely a lot of songs that they use with really unique samples, with really unique back sounds that don't necessarily just incorporate drum sounds, but also have different melodies in the background. And
speaking of Kendrick Lamar, which is a good point you bring up, Jordan, he is signed to Aftermath, which is known by Dr. Dre as his money-making machine since he left Death Row and the adversity that came with working with Suge Knight or what have you. But in speaking about Dr. Dre, when he first came on the scene, he was known for sampling electro artists like Kraftwerk. I don't know if anybody knows Kraftwerk, but...
So we've been talking a lot about, you know, the birth of hip-hop, but I want to know, you know, how did hip-hop, you know, move, right? Like, where did gangster rap come from, and why did it, you know, happen?
Great question, Al. See, gangster rap just came from citizens of wherever you are in the world being products of your environment. So where the rich get rich and the poor get poor. If you have no means of survival, you put water in your milk gallons because you're trying to stretch a dollar as much as you can, Al. Music is that outlet, you know? That's been a big medium for expression.
Zinged. Okay, so I don't know how you made up your MC name. Could you share the process a little with us? Because I would love to have my own MC name. And I think I would love to have his own MC name.
I would love to have my own MC name. I'm curious to see what you guys have to say.
No doubt. That's a great question, Stefan. The way I came up with my name, Zinj, was through just, you know, absorbing knowledge. One of the elements in hip-hop is street knowledge. And my family comes from Kenya. And even though I was born in the States, I'm making an effort to try to study Swahili as much as I can. And in studying Swahili, you understand that it's a derivative from Arabic. Because back then, the Arabs would trade with the Africans from that region. So Zinj is actually a PC term in reference to the Africans from that region. It's actually a loosely based term for the country Zanzibar, if you kind of try to put those two, Zanzibar and Zanzibar.
So I'm from San Diego, so maybe my name is Diego or Dieg? Yeah.
Well, I actually got a... Well, I don't have an MC name, but I have a record label for you. Instead of Def Jam, it should definitely be Steph Jam.
I like it. It's Def Jam. Genius. I would listen.
I should start my recording company right now. Just so, scrub out of school.
What would be his MC name, though? You know, like Steph Jam, actually. Steph Jam, okay, I like it. Jam, MC cool. Steph Jam, Zinj. What's yours, Jordan?
So I was talking to some friends about it in high school, and a friend of mine said I should be Jay Newton. I guess in reference to Sir Isaac Newton, because I used to be really into school or whatever. Just Jay Newton sort of rolls off the tongue pretty cool. So I think that I'd probably go with that rap name.
Jay Newton. Okay, cool.
Oh, wait, so Al, you still don't have a MC name.
One MC name I thought of for you, Al, was Al Love, because if you pronounce it different, you could say All Love, you know?
So I'm Steph Jam. Al Love, Jay Newton, Zinged. Thanks for talking with me.
It's my pleasure, Steph, and thanks for having me.
It's always a pleasure, Steph Jam. Big Al Love. This is Zinge signing out. Peace.
Thanks for listening, and don't forget to join us next week when Daily Bruin Radio senior staffer Emily Chu hosts the next episode of Pause, Play, Rewind. Until next time. I miss my cocoa butter kisses. Cigarettes on cigarettes. My mama think I stink. I got burrows in my